Accession number 27460, reel 16.
Mr. Wilkes, reel 16. You've just moved, as you were saying, to the B echelon, where preparations, final preparations, were being made for the action, no doubt.
Yes.
So you were you based at B echelon?
No. I was going to be. But it went upon orders, and Lance Bombardier Gannon came to me. He said, well, he said, you're going to be staying here, and I'm going forward with the troops tomorrow. And I was most determined it would be the other way round. And I went and looked at orders, and sure enough I was on orders to be left behind, and he was on orders to go up. So I went to see the adjutant, and I remonstrated with him. I said, I'm the senior person, and I feel that I ought to be forward to make the necessary decisions or do what's necessary. And he agreed with everything I said. And so the orders were changed, and I was substituted to go forward. And that night we lay out in the open, and away in the distance we could hear the guns rumbling, and we'd sent our last what we thought would be our last letters home for the time being. And lying there a bit apprehensive, just wondering what tomorrow would hold, we're moving out.
Is it a time of reflection for people, for men that are in that situation, ready to go into danger?
I think so. Yes, I think so. I know I felt very much that way. And each time during the night I heard the guns rumbling.
Where are your thoughts, well, you know, your personal thoughts?
At home.
You're obviously wondering what the family were doing. And
that's right, and wondering how worried they would be. And so the next...
Had you any thoughts of anything happening to you? Or?
Well, I was apprehensive. I hoped it wouldn't. The main thing I hoped was that I wouldn't be severely maimed. I thought if anything did happen, let it be final.
And presumably, with it being on the Japanese, the thought of capture would...
Oh,
well, were you getting stories back to you? About
yes. I think I don't know how brave I might have been if it had come to a push, but I think I'd have used my revolver if I'd been taken prisoner by the Japs, or rather, than be taken prisoner if that was the only option.
So you as soldiers, you already, although you hadn't been in action yet, you already knew about what
was happening,
Japanese
and what had been happening,
were and what was happening to them. So there must have been a very great hatred of the Japanese?
Oh, yes.
From the British soldier?
Entirely.
So you're there, it's your last evening before moving forward. What happened then?
Well, we just went to bed and rested, and the following morning we set off. And we didn't travel far before our first, what I would say, appeared to be an obstacle. It was a very rickety bridge that crossed a chong, which was like a small river. It stood, about 10 feet above the water, and nailed here and there along the side were bits of basket work, just to stop you getting dizzy going over. The bridge was constructed of long pieces of timber on stilts, and then more long pieces of timber. There were cross boards across with about an inch between each board, then long pieces of timber laid across the top and bolted through to the under ones. And when you saw a vehicle going over the bridge, you could see the whole bridge shaking and wobbling. So I was a bit apprehensive when it came to the guns going over. Well, we went over before they went over, and I could only go by what I was told by the gun crews and the Matador drivers. The AC Matador's wheels just fitted snugly between the two long timbers along the bridge, but the gun wheels were 3 inches wider. The track was 3 inches wider, So when they pulled the gun onto the bridge, the wheels were actually running with just an inch and a half of tyre on this wooden long runner on the bridge. And of course they had to go across very gingerly because the bridge was shaking, and a 22 ton up just crawled over. The gunners walked over, incidentally, but they got over without anything going wrong.
You say, was this advanced headquarters now that you're with yourself?
What was going to be advanced, yes. The forward. Forward HQ. Yeah. Yes.
And you were leading the guns?
Yes.
The batteries?
That's right. And so we... And this was the 29th of February, 1944... And it was my friend's 21st birthday.
So that's a date that's clear in your mind.
Very clear.
The terrain you were moving through, what was it?
It was very dusty, very churned up. We went through a place called Cox's Bazaar. Now then, I might add that we were going to a place called the Admin Box, which had just recently been relieved. It had been encircled by the Japanese, but a way had been broken through. We thought we were going to do that for them, but anyway, some forces, either from inside or outside, had made a way through. So we were wary of what might occur en route.
Because you wouldn't exactly know that all the Japanese had gone from the area.
No. Because they were marvellous at dispersing.
Were there signs of battle as you were going through?
Not really, no.
I'm thinking indeed, you know, of damage and destruction and so forth.
No, you couldn't really pin anything down unless you were really looking for it. And we were looking forward rather than on the spot. But we did finally get into a position right in the battle area, in the Admin Box, and this was where regimental headquarters, or forward part of regimental headquarters, was deployed, close to a jetty on the Mayu River. It was just a track, not a road, that ran down beside us, and it was a Y junction there, and on the other side of the road from us, I think it was the 130 Field Regiment. And one of our batteries would...
Is that an artillery regiment, by the way?
Yes, 130 Field Regiment, yes. And one of our batteries was more or less opposite the 130 Field, on the corner where the road split into two. So the gun pits had been vacated by a field regiment that had 25 pounders, so the gun pits were to enlarge for our guns, and that was the first job that had to be done. But with darkness coming on, a lot of it didn't get finished, because he went on to a silent routine as soon as it became dark. So we eventually settled down for the night. I had a post with seven other men on a bit of a radius of the road going down to the jetty, and I think, if my memory serves me right, there was a ship up the river at the time beside the jetty. We had a good dugout, and we were prepared for the night. And
what were you lying on in the dugout?
Just our ground sheets. And our, we had a blanket, of course.
And you were saying it was silence, so you had to keep the noise down.
Yes.
Yeah. So were you hearing jungle sounds? Or
lots of them, yes.
And they were they pretty new to you still?
Yes, birds and crickets and things like that. All sorts of funny sounds. And of course, I think a lot of us were a bit concern because we knew the Japanese used to use various animal sounds as well. But at that stage, we weren't quite sure what was what. We did learn to the difference later on.
Did you have your own defensive positions in case of problems?
Yes, my position was on this radius, and I was sort of looking down towards the jetty, more or less, but just on the bend where you could look slightly back up the road. Anyway, as it turned out, I needed to look two ways, because at 2:15 in the morning, there was what was referred to as a fighting patrol came through with the Japanese. Now, from what I understand, they drove up in a captured British 3-ton lorry, disembarked, or dismounted, should I say, and the officer had called out, the Japanese officer, "Fall in three ranks," and then banzai. And some of them charged onto the 130 field, and some rushed onto our position. And those that rushed onto our gun position were sticking magnetic bombs onto the breeches of three of the guns. They killed three of our men, wounded seven, and I suppose scared the living daylights out of the rest of us. But it seemed all hell let loose for about 15 minutes. I don't think it lasted any longer. The small arms fire, grenades exploding, and there it was. Now, my immediate reaction was to... we stood to, of course, at the first sign of anything, and I immediately kept four men facing down towards the jetty, and three and myself turned to face what might come down from the gun position. But it didn't happen. So
they didn't get through to you?
No, they didn't get as far as off.
And were those three guns destroyed that they put charges on?
They're badly damaged, yes.
So that was not a very good start to the,
no.
the situation.
And unfortunately, that relieved our colonel of his command. He'd lost three guns, so that was a black mark against him.
So he was replaced?
Yes, and he was replaced by one of the battery commanders, Major Soames, who was now promoted to Lieutenant Colonel Soames, a regular soldier, a man who I can't say I particularly liked, but he, as a soldier, you couldn't do anything but admire him. He was first class.
Immediately after an action, I mean, the adrenaline must have flowed. You know, it's been
yes,
pretty well excited by it all, or whatever the right term is.
And badly shaken.
And presumably, did it go quiet very quickly, once there was noise and then the silence?
It faded out. There was the odd shot, and then all gone. Now then, all that we could account for was some few pools of blood. We don't know if we killed anyone or not. On the other side of the road, the 130 Field Regiment, their side, they captured the Japanese officer who was wounded, and they mounted a guard over him, and during the afternoon he got mysteriously bayoneted, but by whom I don't know. He was still on the position. Now, the Japanese Sergeant Major was killed by one of the chaps on the 130 field who hit him with a machete and put an end to his life. And apart from that, I don't know what the casualty rates were.
Did you see any of these bodies yourself?
No. Not the Japanese ones, no. Now,
some of the men that you mentioned, that of your own men that were killed, were any of them known to you?
No. They were out the battery. One was called Bridgman, one was called Toyer, and I can't remember the third one.
What was the result on the morale or spirit of the unit?
Determination.
Because this is your first blooding in effect.
Yes. And that morning, regimental headquarters pulled away from there and we went and joined the other battery, who was on a better position and more spread out. And we moved down there. It was to give this battery more room to deploy. So in the afternoon, the adjutant personally saw me and he said, "What are your vehicles like?" And they were all okay. He said, "Well, I'd like you to go round to 522 battery and see if you can give Staff Sergeant Dodds a hand with the guns, see if he needs any help with those." So I went round, and thereby lies another little story. Because as I drove up to the fork in the road, I was following an infantry truck, and the position came under shell fire. And this fellow bailed out of his lorry, just leaving it, blocking the road, and he ran to me and asked if there was any slit trenches. So I told him where there'd be one on the gun position, but I said, "Shift your bloody truck." But he didn't. He ran. He was mortified. He just disappeared. Well, I pulled my truck so it wasn't obstructing anything, and at the same time was out of view a little bit. And by then I could see that the gun tractor was under a tree beside the first gun on our position. Its cover over the rear part was on fire. The camouflage net that was over it was on fire. And my one thought was to rescue the gun tractor, because they were a premium. So I ran across to the gun tractor, opened the door, and slammed in the main switch, climbed up into it, and I was busy changing it from reverse gear into first gear and knocking the energizer switch on for the starter motor, and I pressed the starter motor and nothing happened. And I thought, have I hit the wrong switch? Which I hadn't, actually, but it had been faulty and they'd put it onto the auxiliary switch. But anyway, at that precise moment, a shell burst under the front of the vehicle, came up through the floorboards, and some of the shrapnel went out through the roof, and I was still in one piece, so I jumped out and I left it. 29 shells landed in a very small area, and I jumped down the slit trench beside the vehicle. As I jumped into the trench, this great sheet of flame covered the top of the trench, and panic for a moment struck me, and I thought it was the 40-gallon diesel tank that had taken fire, that was right beside the trench, just above the trench virtually. And so it turned out it wasn't as bad as it seemed. It was a box of charges for the guns that had been hit and had taken fire, because something had also set off a box of small arms ammunition, and bullets were flying here, there and everywhere. So anyway, the flames subsided in a minute, something like a minute. And then I saw that this fellow that had was looking for a slit trench, he'd managed to climb into a hole in the side of the slit trench that had been dug out to fit a wireless into. And I could see the soles of his boots and the cheeks of his backside, and that was as much as I could see. I think he was being like a mole and trying to push his way through further and further. Anyway, as soon as the shelling stopped, I was out of the trench, and I called for help, and it was there in a moment. And the proper driver leapt in, he knew which switch to press, and we pulled the tractor out and pulled the blazing camouflage net, etc., off it. And the officer that was, our own officer, was shouting, "Get the fire out." I said, "They'll range on the smoke," which they would have done, but we got it all put out.
What's the immediate reaction to being under shell fire for the first time? It's pretty important. You can't do anything, of course.
It was after, at the moment it didn't strike me. It was afterwards when it struck.
And what was that? What were your feelings then?
You've been damned lucky. That's the way I felt. I mean, when I'd seen the shrapnel holes through the roof, and I hadn't been touched at all, I was amazed.
No shaking or anything of that, the wind that's really hit you?
No.
Because, you know, shelf ice coming in, and you're helpless, in a sense. You can't do anything about it.
That's right. I think if there'd been a bit more shell fire at the time, I might have got a bit worried, but there wasn't any more there and then.
Presumably a reaction to get to the gun truck, the...
Yes, the tractor.
Was taking your, you know...
That's right, that concentration. That was it. Save the tractor. And, no, I don't take any bouquets for that. It's...
Any bodies or anyone killed?
No one hurt. And so I saw Staff Sergeant Dodds, and there was nothing I could do to help him except take a list of parts that he would require back to our stores, which would have to be sent back down the line.
So this is 522 battery that you'd gone to?
Yes.
How many guns again had that?
Eight.
Were you still with the two battery situation?
Oh,
regiment?
Yes.
And the other batteries had lost three out of their eight?
No, sorry. It was 522 that had lost three out of theirs. So 1-3 battery hadn't been touched at all.
Where were the guns sighted in relation to the front itself?
Well,
these are long range guns, aren't they?
Yes. But we were fairly close. We were close to the Mayu range. We were close to a point on the range which was referred to, if my memory serves him right, as 1301, where the Japanese had got well and truly dug in and had prepared for anything. This position had been dive-bombed and shelled numerous occasions, and they couldn't get the Japs out. But thereby lies another story that I can relate.
We'll get that in its chronological order.
Yes, when it comes in turn.
So you've had your first baptism of fire, both an attack at night and shell fire.
Yes.
What was the next situation?
Well, I went back to where headquarters had moved, beside 1-3 battery, and I was allocated a position on top of a hill, and I was warned that there was a track went along the top where the Japanese and the British patrols were using, so to be careful. We were trying to enlarge the dugout when I went up, but I'd had one of the new trucks that had come to us, one of these American Dodges. It was causing a little problem, so I went and sorted that one out, which was new to me because it was such a different sort of carburetor and everything. But I mastered the problem, and I knew from then on what to look for, and that fault occurred quite often due to water being in the petrol. It would seize the accelerator pump up in the position where it was pumping more and more petrol into the engine that it could take.
Was the area camouflaged? Were trucks always camouflaged? And
yes, everything was camouflaged, but we were in virtual jungle conditions in there. And so...
So you could get basically hidden
yes.
amongst them. Your dugout that you're describing, how could you give me the dimensions of it?
Well, it would be roughly 6 feet. It was let into the hillside. Our heads, at that stage, would be the only thing below ground, because by we dug it out level to that, for the feet, we still had to still go down then. But that wasn't all, because our cookhouse was sited in a little ravine in the position. And so at tea time, a couple of us, as we went down to get our meal, there was a shot rang out from off our position. and we heard it. I thought I was in front, and I thought it was behind me, and the chap whose name was Mundy was he thought it was in front. He thought I'd probably got it, but there was obviously a sniper somewhere on our position, but we never found him. But anyway, we had our meal, and as we finished our Mepocrine parade, the sergeant major came to me, and he wanted me to go along with a driver and what he called an escort. We had to go back round to 522 battery with some orders. Under no circumstances must they fall into enemy hands. He gave us a box of matches into the bargain. We also had a grenade, and we also had to try and stuff them into the petrol tank and set fire to them if we got caught. We knew that there were a lot of Japs that were still around from the earlier episode, that they'd be hanging around. And so we would go up to the gun position with this lot. And when we got there, the officer didn't want us to come back. He said, well, we've got nothing with us. We're just our weapons. We've no bedding. We've not got our packs or anything. And so he agreed to let us go back.
Why did he want you to stay?
He thought it was unsafe for us. He was nearly right. As we approached our own position, I was driving, and the two that were with me, they were standing up in the back of the truck, leaning over the rails that would support the canopy. And I saw this person walking along the road, and as I passed him, I realised he was a Jap. And I stopped. I just got past. I was saying that he's a Jap, he's a Jap. But he disappeared, and he went into the undergrowth, and we searched, and we couldn't find him. So we drove. We didn't have far to go, maybe a couple of hundred yards, possibly, to our own position, and we reported the situation and went back to our own position. And when we got up to our own place on the top of the hill, I was told that there was going to be a hell of a barrage go over that night. The whole of the Corps artillery were going to open up. So we'd drawn lots for who did what and on ours. We only had four men on this post. So my shift was due to start at midnight. And so I said to one of the chaps, I said, just give me a call before midnight, because that's when we thought the barrage was going to go over, which it did. By God, when it started, it nearly pushed us down the hill. The whole mountainside was shaking.
How many guns do you think?
Oh, there must be well over 100 guns.
So this was quite a large position, area position you were in.
Oh, yes, in the area, because I mean, we were down to 13 guns, and I don't know how many field regiments of 25-pounders, mortar batteries, and goodness knows what. But, someone mentioned 110 guns to me the following day, but how near to the truth that was, I just don't know.
Was this in support of a major infantry attack?
Yes.
And what was the objective?
Do you know? I think the first target was where the Japanese were assembling some of their convoys with a lot of supplies and things. We opened up on them.
So there were four of you, I think you said, in your particular post.
Yes.
And so you divide your watches up through the night.
Yes.
And essentially was that against any infiltrating Japanese
infantry? That's right, yes.
It must have been a bit of a grandstand view when this barrage started.
Oh, yes. The sky was alight. It was a marvellous firework display.
And does this give you a feeling of...
Yes. You know, yes, we're winning.
You're winning, yes.
Which we weren't. Well, we were, because the admin box had been relieved and they weren't going to get it back now.
You've talked about driving down roads. Now, in the box itself, were these just tracks?
Just tracks.
They weren't metalled roads?
Oh, no.